So, welcome everybody. Or good morning after the lunch break, right? It's the best session of the day. I asked the staff to raise the light a little bit so it's not that dark in here in this nice red room without windows. And I hope to keep you awake for the next couple of minutes. How has Tech been so far for you? Good? You like Barcelona as a location? Huh. Just a few questions. Who's using TFS right now? Okay, who's using TFS for more than 5 years? Wow, who's using TFS since 2005 TFS? Whew, that's a lot. Nice. Would you be willing to store your source code in the cloud? And your company's also willing to do that? Who thinks his company would not be willing? What did you say? Thank you. Oh, okay. Would it change if it's in Europe? Like, would you be able to store your source code if it's in Europe? Okay. Not that much change. You think it's better if the source code is stored in Europe than somewhere? Who thinks it's better? Yeah? Half of the room? Exactly. Okay, that's interesting. So, before we start, I have some things to discuss with you. You know, when we do feedback, we look at your feedback between those sessions, and when we prepare those sessions, we look at how we can improve the overall structure of this conference and each and every session. And guess what we found in a few studies? So nothing to do with TFS, by the way. So if you look at the typical plot structure of a story or a session, we try to follow the classic plot structure, right? You raise the tension throughout the whole 75 minutes presentation, and then at the end, there's this coolest demo thing, and you're all amazed, right? This is how the typical structure looks like. Unfortunately, it's after lunch. And even more unfortunately, this is the typical attention curve of attendees in a 75-minute session, and it looks like this. So right now, you're actually paying attention. Give it 15 more minutes and you will not listen anymore. That is a problem we have, a challenge to solve. Any ideas what we can change now? Shorter slots. Unfortunately, I can't change that anymore for this time. I mean, I could just, you know, cut the session in two or maybe no. Any other ideas what we can do now? Excuse me? Jokes. No, I'm not good at joking, sorry. Start with a cool demo. So basically reverse the talk, kind of, right? Huh. I haven't prepared that, but maybe if we try, we might be able to reverse the talk. What do you think? Should we try that? Okay, let's go. Thank you for joining. Enjoy Barcelona, enjoy TechEd. If you have any more questions, feel free to come up front or see me at the Tech Expo tonight. It's very important for me that all your questions get solved, so either ask me now here at the conference or drop me an email afterwards because all the good questions usually have them after the conference, right? Thanks a lot. Thanks for your attention. Goodbye. And don't forget to evaluate this session, obviously. How did you like it so far? Which was the favorite demo? This one? Did you learn anything new in the last 75 minutes? No? Who said no? Yeah, we know that about the evaluations. But it's actually really important that you use the eval forms, otherwise we don't know how you liked it. There are a lot of resources where you can go, but a few one that I selected for you. This is not the one that I selected. This was from the TechEd team. This was from the TechEd team too. You know, we have a lot of slides with what's next. But a few next steps that you might want to take. After this session, if you stay in this room, Microsoft will tell you how they transformed their own company into a more agile way, and especially since it's a large organization with more than just one agile team and how that worked. If you liked everything that I showed you about Application Insights, there are two sessions about that, and there's one called Better Together, where you will see how you can bring together Visual Studio Online and on-premises stuff and use the best of both worlds. And obviously, ask me questions if you have any. What else? Whatever I've showed you can try yourself. It's all public. Nothing was unreleased that I showed you, so you can sign up for your own TFS and Visual Studio Online account, tfsvisualstudio.com, If you have any ideas, you can go to Microsoft User Voice site, and this is actually something really cool because Microsoft is using User Voice. You probably know that. Who has used the User Voice site of Visual Studio already? Oh, just two of you. You know that you can vote on that site what Microsoft should be doing next and ideas. So if you want to change anything about Visual Studio, add features or whatever, make Microsoft do something else, you can go there and vote. Everyone gets 10 votes. You can spend 3 votes on each idea. You can put in your own ideas. And Microsoft usually really takes that list, the top whatever items, top few items, and tries to stick that into the next update, which is really a good chance because not too many people are using that website. So if you have a feature that you always wanted in Visual Studio, and you have a couple of guys in your company, tell them all about your idea and make them all vote, and you have a good chance that this will come true. The third one, I know no one of us likes reading documentation or README files, but if you haven't looked at the MSDN library recently, especially for the ALM, Visual Studio Online part, it's actually pretty good. At some point, like years ago, I stopped reading MSDN, but right now I discovered it's actually pretty good. It's not just describing each feature, it's actually telling you how to work, like the whole description, how a typical day of a developer might look like, all the tools you will need to do your daily business. A few book recommendations, just as part of the slide deck. And for everything I've showed you in the last 70 minutes, those are the links if you want more information. So what I've shown you especially is that Visual Studio Online is more than just Team Foundation Server. Of course, it has everything in there that you love and want to use from TFS and all the new and cool stuff, usually even a few more updates than your on-premises TFS. But especially it has some features and some additional services that you do not have available on-premises. So you really need to use them in the cloud or you can't use them. First of all, it's obviously the Elastic Build Service. So you don't have to set up your own build infrastructure, just use the one that Microsoft provides, which is a great start if you just want to get a project up and running. And later you can still add your own build service if you want. Continuous deployment to Azure. It's super easy to set up a deployment path if you want to run your website on Microsoft Azure or, well, the VM or a website on Microsoft Azure. Cloud Load Testing Service or Visual Studio Testing Test Agents. If you want to stress test your application, simulate how it would evolve and how it would react under load, this is something you want to use. Because there's no sense to buy hardware just for like 1 week where you can do a lot of stress testing, simulating thousands of users and then throwing away your hardware. So this might be a scenario where the cloud comes handy. The last one, Application Insights, is the only one that's not publicly ready. Well, it's a preview, so-called preview. That means it's still under active development. Things are changing. There's no commitment that it works 100% right now, and it might get a few changes. Which one was the best so far? Application Insights. It's very promising, right? Unfortunately, just a preview, so we have no clue how much it will cost and when it will be ready, but it looks really promising, giving you all the insights into a single service or your whole service family. Yeah, very interesting, I agree. So my personal favorite is not on that list, actually. It's a recent change that happened, and it's the stakeholder access to Visual Studio Online, which basically means that if you have people who want to look at your data in TFS and participate in work items, requirements, bugs, or whatever, you don't need to buy a license for them anymore. So access to work items generally is for free. It doesn't really mean that your project managers are coming for free because they probably want more and use all the features that they have on the website. But at least if you have people not so regularly interacting with you, like customers, internal stakeholders, support personnel, they can now access TFS and do quite a few things without having a license for that. I think that's pretty neat. And let's have a look how this looks like. So one thing that you will learn when you start using Visual Studio Online is that you have this users tab or hub where you can see all the users in your account and you have to assign them licenses, right? So if you have MSDN, then you will see that it recognizes this. So I have one user on my list that already has an MSDN license, so it doesn't count for this account. I have two, one with a basic license. You probably know that you can have 5 basic licenses for free. And I can change now the account of one of those guys change the license to the new stakeholder license model. So this was Nino Scrum. Let's try to log in as that guy. So I'm now a stakeholder. I'm not paying any license. I'm connecting to this Visual Studio Online account for the first time, and it will tell me, by the way, as a stakeholder, you can access backlog tasks, Kanban boards, work items. But it says access, right? It doesn't say really that you can do everything. It just tells you that a few views are open for you. So what you do not get is anything else than work items. So no access to source code, no access to builds, no access to test case management, which probably is something your project managers maybe want. And now you can go to the Work tab, and you have the backlogs and the queries view. You're not getting full fidelity in those views. A few features might be missing. Like my favorite feature is the drag and drop if you have a backlog, right? Something that project managers like to do. You're not getting that as a stakeholder, so you need to buy a real license if you want drag and drop support. You can still do everything on work items, but in Excel if you want, but no, actually Excel is excluded too. There's no Excel support. So if you have a project manager that loves Excel, he needs to buy at least a license. So I can still add items and ideas, but there's no drag and drop support whatsoever. So it's really more, you could say read-only, you can add stuff, but it's more or less read-only and just to interact with a few selected stakeholders. But sometimes I'm actually quite happy that stakeholders cannot change the order of things, otherwise they would change it every day. I'm quite happy to have something like a product owner in between, and he's the only one with a license for dragging and dropping things, like reprioritizing. Sometimes that's a good idea. Or would you like to have your customer resort your backlog every day? Who would prefer the customer is allowed to resort your backlog? Okay. One. Hopefully that was a joke. Okay, that's a stakeholder license available in Visual Studio Online. If you have TFS on premises, the next TFS update will get you a similar functionality so that you can have this view limited, only showing work items for those stakeholders. Who thinks this is cool? Yep, was a good addition, looks like. I like it too. I created a list with everything that works and does not work. I started with a blog post from Microsoft, but I added a little bit more. So what you can do is, in fact, you have full access to work items. You can read them, create them, update them, whatever you like. You can create your own personal My Queries over the work items. You can view the team homepages, and you can access the backlog, although you cannot reprioritize or decompose work. You can also receive work item alerts. That's also new. So you can subscribe to, for example, give me an email notification each and every time that someone updates one of my product backlog items. What's not included in the stakeholder license? Obviously, the reprioritization and decomposition in the backlog views. You cannot create work item charts. You cannot use the project manager's favorite tools like Microsoft Excel and Microsoft Project. No access to code, build, team rooms, test hubs, the whole part that is very engineering related. And no administrative functionality. So if you're really a team administrator, project administrator, you will need a license. So far, so good? So then, let's continue on. Application Insights is the last service I wanted to talk about, the last addition to Visual Studio Online. And it really is a set of services. So it's not one thing, as you've seen in the demo. It's multiple things. And you really want to find out, how is my application doing? Is it still there? Who's using it? How is it being used? And basically, it's trying to answer this one question next to, like, is it working right now? What shall we do next? Like, if people, how are people interacting with the application? What should be the next step? If I have three modules in my application and a lot of bugs to fix, what is the module that is heavily used? So which is the one that I should focus on in the next bug fixing time frame? Oh, very good question. Is application insights for web applications only? It's very easy for web applications. This is the reason why we used to demo it. But you can use it for basically each and every application type. You can have it for Windows Forms if you like to. So it's just you know, usage data. If you use it for Windows Forms, you have to do a little bit more work. So basically you have an SDK and you have to program against it to tell them like a button was clicked or someone clicked a menu, whatever. If it's a website, you know, the ASP.NET handlers will automatically give you the open pages, the requests. So you get a lot of rich information without changing your code actually. But basically it's the same thing. And if you have a combined application, you have a, maybe a rich client, a mobile client, a web access client, and a web service, you can have all that under one application insights view. And I think this is why it's so important, right? I mean, writing a log file is something you could do for ages, but really getting the full story into one dashboard, that's the goal of application insights. And it's still a goal, right? It's not like done that you can just use it and everything's fine, but it's a really good start. So since it's a preview and not like released or generally available yet, you can also see it on the new Azure preview portal. And there's an area for application insights, this light bubble here. And I created a small service yesterday just to show it. And you can see that in the last 24 hours, there were 785 requests handled by this small website of mine. It's really not a very sophisticated website. It's more a Hello World thing, but still, someone seems to be using it. So let's click on it and wait for the data. It takes a little while. So you can see that some of those items are already filled with data. This is what he could automatically get out of a website without me modifying anything. And some other things either have no data because the application has not failed. You know, my applications never fail, so this is why a failed request does not have any data. But in case it would be your application, you might have some failed requests here. This is an area focusing on availability. So you can see that Application Insights has checked a couple of times if the application is still there and if it's responding, if it's responding correctly. How is it doing that? It's actually doing that through simple ping tests on the one hand, and on the other hand, this is the simple ping test. And on the other hand, there's a multi-step ping test, which is basically a web test, web performance test that you can write with Visual Studio. So assuming I want to make sure this website is working and available, let's add a new test then. Add a new web test. Oh, I can't create a new one. Yeah, thanks. That portal is interesting. Let's open the existing test, and you will see that it's a simple ping test. This is the URL it will be pinging. I can choose the locations. Right now, I choose two locations in the US, but honestly, we're now in Spain, so let's maybe focus on pinging it from Amsterdam and maybe from Dublin. I think this makes sense. Okay, those will be the two locations where we'll receive pings from. We will be checking that the access code is 200, and we will turn this thing on. We can tune the sensitivity, which basically means how often you get an alert via email. You can put another email address in here if you want to alert someone else that something's not working with your website. I think that's pretty nice because you can schedule as many locations as you want, and it will be pinging your website. In this case, I think it's every 5 or 15 minutes, depending how your severity is configured, and you will see that your website is still there. How about line of business application? So yeah, what we're using here basically is just HTTP. So somehow your application needs to respond to this, and it has to have a public endpoint. So this is more for web services, websites, and stuff, and it will not give you the data for your line of business application. If you have something on premises, like a server where you host something, I don't know, Windows service or web services or whatever, you can install a small client, an agent, that will send the data up to Application Insights. So you will add the data from your server. And the coolest part about this is you don't even have to change your code. For example, I have a server with TFS set up, local, typical on-premises TFS. I installed Microsoft Monitoring Agent, pointed it to Application Insights, and now I can see how this machine is doing, like the health, if there were any exceptions, how much memory is still there, how much requests are coming in through IIS, without me changing anything of TFS code, because I didn't write TFS, obviously, so it's just an installed product. And if it would be my code, I could even add my own custom, you know, alerts and metrics and traces if I wanted to. Yeah, so Microsoft started providing APIs for web applications, Windows Store apps, and mobile apps in the first, as the first steps, but still no one stops you from using that in Windows Forms or WPF or whatever you have, because it's basically just numbers that get sent over the wire. So there's more. There's a diagnostics area here, which is not used right now, and a diagnostic search tile. Diagnostic search basically means that you go all the way down to your log file. So all the traces that you usually put in a huge log file or database, you can actually send them to Application Insights. So yes, Microsoft has more than one server waiting there, and they can handle a lot of data. This is real big data. You can send every thought of your application to this database, and then you can do a full text search on everyone using your app where something appeared in the log file, which is really nice if you really have issues right now with your application. You can still turn on and off tracing if you want in your app. And it's a nice thing if you're really analyzing for issues. Okay, so we have availability. We have this diagnostic search. We have a couple of indicators like server response time, the amount of server requests. So far, so good. We should have usage somewhere. Oh, there, we have usage. You see that we have a number of sessions, number of users. And if we drill into that, we will even find out where those users are coming from. So one user is in Spain. I think that's me, actually. And 130 came from the US. And that's probably the Microsoft Ping service that we just, you know, the availability monitoring that we just set up, which is pinging from the United States. If we wait a couple of minutes, at least, what was it, the Netherlands and Ireland should appear on that list too, right? Because I reconfigured the ping test to run from Europe now. Did we already get new data? Yeah, it's a bit, it takes a while until you get new data. No, not yet. Okay. You can look into the sessions, which will give you some context information. IE9, IE11, IE11 was me. IE9 is probably the Microsoft Ping service, and it's probably running on Windows 7. Huh, interesting. And someone's using Safari on his iPhone to check my website. Who's that? It's okay. Okay, this is what you get without really doing anything to your web application other than right-clicking it in Visual Studio and saying, I want to add application insights to this project. And then it will add a few files, a few config entries, and it starts putting the data on this portal, which is the new Azure Preview portal. And there's a lot of more to be done here, but I think it will be a really, really interesting thing because it gives you so much insights into how people are actually using your application if you start sending that data, that all your decisions on the next thing to do will be better, right? If you know what people are using and what they're not using, you know how to change the application or which module to improve, for example. So at some point, as a product owner, a project planner, I will get so much used to getting that data, how people use my application, that I won't be able to remember how we ever done it without Application Insights, or at least a similar technology to get data out of the application usage. Okay, this is just the consuming scenario. I haven't showed you the code or the application yet, just to show you how you can access the data once you started sending it up to the service. Good, let's go back to the slides. Okay, again, Application Insights is not a single thing. It's a mixture of different things that wants to provide you the full view what your application is doing. There are simple things like availability and alerting, which is nothing more than pinging your website or running a web test that you recorded, and it will tell you if it's available. And you can choose multiple locations worldwide to see if your application is available from multiple continents. Performance, you can see how your application is performing, if it's still there, and if it's fast enough, because it's easy to ping an application and see if it's there, but it's not easy to spot that it's not responding as fast as you thought it would be responding. And the customer will quickly tell you if your application is not working, even before application insights knows about it, usually. Someone will call you or send you an email and say, you know what, your application stopped working. This is the best alert you will ever get, and it's super fast. But what if it's just slower? Will people actually send you an email that it's unusually slow and special functions? I don't know, probably not. So this is your way to, you know, instrument your application in production, not just in a debugger scenario or with a profiler, to find out where the fast and slowest spots are that you want to tackle. And usage is the thing I talked about as a product owner. I think it's very important to find out how other people are using my applications. How often are they clicking the buttons? How often are they clicking the links? You know that from websites for a long time because they always had log files. You can open the log file, you'll see how often each site has been clicked. But for Windows applications and other rich clients, it was not normal to do that, and I think it should be normal. Should become normal, at least. So here's the official definition. Application Insights is a set of cloud-based services to provide a 360-degree view into availability, performance, usage of applications and services. And it doesn't mean it's only web applications, but obviously they're easier to monitor. Okay. So the next thing we'll see is Application Insights, right? To do it in the right order. So there's one thing called Visual Studio Load Testing Service, or short Cloud Testing Service, that's part of Visual Studio Online. And it's very, very easy to use. But what you need to use that is at least one Visual Studio Ultimate license, and you need at least one endpoint, publicly reachable endpoint, where Microsoft can ping or, you know, invoke your service. So this has to be some kind of HTTP endpoint, web application. It doesn't have to be Microsoft technology. You can use just a simple ping or write your own web performance tests. You can set up the capacity that you want to run. And then you can just click a button, and Microsoft will spin up a lot of agents, and those agents will create the load against your website. You can use 15,000 virtual user minutes for free per month, which basically means that if you have like a test with 250 virtual users at the same time and you run it for 60 minutes, that should be good per month, per account. And here's how this looks like. So there are two ways to do this, and there's an easy and a more, well, I'm not saying complicated, but more sophisticated way to do that, and you can choose which one you like. One is directly integrated in the website, but it doesn't let you choose a lot of things. It's more to, you know, show it, that you get a feeling what it's actually doing. You can demo it to someone else in your company and convince them that this is something you should have been doing all the time. Because if we're honest, we tend to write web services, and we don't really test them if they will survive a load of 100 or whatever users at the same time, right? Who's doing load testing already? Who's using Visual Studio Online for load testing? Okay, so it's just a minority using load testing so far. So let's put in some website that we like to test. The cool thing about this is you can put in any website you like. So if you have a competitor and you're pretty sure that they will not handle the load well, I never said that, right? You would obviously not do that. Okay, this is the website that I created. It's a simple website that will create you a new GUID. Awesome. It works. And now we'll use that website to create a new sample load test, and I will give it 50 users. I will run it for 2 minutes, have a think time of 5 seconds in between. Huh. Where's Firefox gone? Okay, IE has, I don't know, maybe 40. Test now. But there's nothing more I can set here other than the capacity and the load I want to generate. It's good to get a feeling how this works, right? Now, there are virtual machines spinned up in Windows Azure, and they will attack, if you will, your website at the same time with this think time that I chose. But if you want more fidelity, you have to go to Visual Studio, open up Visual Studio Ultimate, and do more. And I will prepare that in the background. configuring agents. My website has like one button, but still it can be a bad button. I think what's interesting about this is not that my website has one button, because I wanted to keep it very simple. It's more interesting that you get data right now, right? You will get an average request per second and stuff like that. And if you do the next update to this website with one button, and this makes it slower or faster, and you run the load tests again, then you will see the comparison. And that's where it gets interesting, because especially load testing generates a lot of data. And what does it tell you? I mean, like, I don't know, 14.5 seconds to execute that test. It doesn't tell you anything. The more interesting is, how did it evolve, right? Is it better than last week or worse? Did the last update make my application slower? And that's what we are aiming at. It's more a comparison trend thing. And yes, I could open up that button right now, put a sleep in there, and you will see how the difference looks like. So even one button can be pretty bad.
But what if you have like phones that needed certain...
Yeah, if you need more, exactly. So this is more the I'm a project manager, I have no clue about programming, but now I can call myself someone who's able to run a load test. This is the project manager non-techie view. Now let's go to the techie view, which is obviously Visual Studio, while this is running. No one stops you from spinning up a new project here. And then you have full control over exit codes and everything you like to do. Once Visual Studio is loaded. It's a web performance and load test project. And let me open up. Is that, yeah, that's the website, okay. So let's record a new web test. I browse to my super simple website. I will generate a new grid. I will stop recording. I have to wait a few seconds until the parameters are analyzed. And now you have a couple of properties on the one hand, like expected HTTP codes, expected response URLs that you can check for, and you can run multiple validation rules. Validation rule for our website would, for example, be that it's not available. That's exactly what should not happen. Hey, see, you said it's a simple website. It stopped working. Still running tests, huh? Let's see the result from the simple load test in a second. Basically, I can steal this thunder here and go and find a text on the website. And if you find that text, pass if text found is true. This is a validation rule. Now I have this web test, and I can either use this as a load test or as an application insights availability test. So what I have to do to make that work with application insights is just go to the bin folder, grab the .webtest.xml file, and copy that, and you can upload that on the Application Insights portal, which would be, oh, sorry, we had to sign you out. Why? Don't like to be signed out. Coming back. See the number of requests slightly increased since we ran the load test. Let's look at the availability monitors. It's still 100% available, he says. Huh, not sure about the 100%. And if you go to the multi-step ping test, you will see that this one is actually executing a web test file. So you can add your own web test file and it will run your web test. So whatever you put in there as validation rules. And you can have multiple steps, like you can click through the whole website, like a whole path, and make sure this one's working, and then choose your alert level, how important that test is for you. Yeah, website seems to be working again. I think it was only a short internet issue. that working again? Yeah, it's working again here too. Good. Now let's run a real load test in the cloud using my own custom web test now. All I have to do is the same thing as I would do it on premises. I open up the new load test wizard. Do not think, well, use recorded think time. Wait 1 second. Create a constant load of 25 users. I only have one test, so it doesn't matter in which order you execute them. Add the one test I have. Add the network speed, full speed. Add the browsers you're using. Who does have Netscape 6? Does that even run on Windows 8? Let's use Netscape 6. Performance monitors, if this is a machine that is in my network, I can monitor performance with performance monitors. I can set up a warm-up duration for my service, like 10 seconds warm-up, and then a 1 minute test, load test, finish. So this looks good so far. Let me check the controller. Manage test controllers is not the one I was looking for. Run settings. Add run setting. Did I do that already? I did, huh? Where is that thing I'm looking for? Add run setting. I've done that before. Let's see what the other one's doing meanwhile. I'm jumping back and forth now, but here you see how the result looks like of our very simple test. So it only tells us an average response time, requests per second, nothing more. And if we run our own web test as part of a load test, we can get way more sophisticated data. But once again, we're not checking if the website is working correctly now. We're really trying to find out if many people are using it, and it has to be correct, obviously, the result. How does it compare to how it worked maybe 2 weeks ago? Does it really meet our goals, our performance goals? And so I was working on a project where they actually needed a huge load every 2 years just to be able to test. And there's no way you will buy hardware and then keep it for 2 years and then reuse it for such a testing scenario. So it's really nice to be able to just spin up the few, and you're only charged by the minute that you actually use the virtual users, and then they're just gone somewhere in the Microsoft cloud and you don't care. Okay. What else have we got? So, as I told you, there is a build service that you can use, but you don't have to use. If you don't use it, what's your option? You can configure your own build controller, either offline, well, Meet's not offline, it's in your office, so it's on premises, or you put it in an Azure VM, if you like, so it's somewhere in the cloud, but under your control. This is something you can choose, so there's no problem having Visual Studio Online in the Microsoft cloud and still having your own local on-premises build service, which makes sense because you probably want the build result, right? You may be running tests against a database or something, and you probably want to use those local resources. So that might make sense. And just to show you how this might look like, here's a little demo. In my case, I spin up an almost empty VM in Windows Azure, or Microsoft Azure as it's now called, and I installed Visual Studio, Team Foundation Server, 2 ISO files. And now if you look at the configuration of TFS, you can go to build server, like you would do it for an on-premises server, pop up the wizard, and the build service will ask you, first of all, if you want to help improve TFS, of course, and then it will ask you for which collection it should do its work, and I can now easily add it to one of our Visual Studio Online accounts. And it will do all the magic necessary so that this works. So you don't need to have any open public port or anything, right? It will just do the communication magically. Basically, the build server is polling Visual Studio Online infrequently to find out if it has something to do. Let's log in. Since this is Visual Studio Online, you always have to log in. So once you start using Visual Studio Online, the dialogue that you will see most of the time is this one, quite a couple of times. It's even worse in Visual Studio because there are actually two places where you need to log in. For the Visual Studio profile, which you know synchronizes your settings and activates the license and stuff, and then when you connect to a Visual Studio Online instance, it pops up the dialogue again. So at least twice, I will have to enter that every time. Oh, that works great. Second try, looks better. So Visual Studio Online accounts only have one default collection. Let's connect. There are zero build controllers and agents, well, at least zero custom ones. There's always the hosted build controller with one agent, and I want one agent on this machine. And I want it to run as a local service. Verify. Configure. So in a few seconds, we hopefully extended our Visual Studio Online account with our own build server hosted somewhere else. Could be in the cloud, doesn't have to be. And it's now almost ready, initializing, and it will be ready to get my requests. Why would I do that anyway? Because I have full control over the build machine now. I can install whatever I need. You know, I can install some certificates if I wanted to. It's probably faster than to use the Microsoft Elastic Build Server because Microsoft Server, you know, takes a while until you get the next fresh machine and it has to be reset. And so you're under full control. You don't have to pay for this if it's your own machine, and it works quite nicely. Let's see if that really works. I do have a build setup somewhere here. I can create a new one. And you see I have my hosted build controller, which is always available in VSO, and we have the new one that I just installed. The machine name was build demo. And if everything is correct, that's all I have to do. This will be my build definition. Let's run it. And now Visual Studio Online will magically trigger that custom build server to do the work. The first build takes a few seconds, and then from the second, it's warm and ready. And you can mix both, right? So for some projects, you can use the hosted build controller and the hosted agent. For some projects, you can use your own ones if it makes sense or you need some additional software. It's up to you what you want to use. You have 60 minutes free per account per month, which is not a lot, but you can, at least for a few smaller projects, might be okay. I mean, 60 minutes a month, that's if you have like a 4-minute build process, 20 working days a month, well, probably more. Yeah, would be maybe enough for a daily build, but not more. And obviously, you can still pay for more minutes if you like, right? This is always possible. So this other definition here is running using the hosted build controller. And what's special about this other definition is that I will turn it off. That's one thing that's special. Oh, we have a NuGet reference problem on the build machine, which we did not have on the build server because maybe not the same software is installed or the same version of NuGet. Let me just put this to manual to show you what I've done here. So one nice thing about the integration with Windows Azure is that you can spin up new websites, which I like to do now. Let's get me a new website, quickly created in Western Europe for free. That sounds good to me. And call it TechEd Room D4. No one used that name before. That's good. This will essentially be an empty website. And we can now link it to our build server so that whenever we check in, the build runs compilation, tests, whatever you have as part of your build process. You can add your own scripts if you like, if you want to change anything on the way. And then it will upload directly to Azure websites or a VM or whatever you prefer. So here, if you go into a freshly created website, there's a integrate source control button. You can choose Visual Studio Online or any other repository that supports it. The data is coming from this account. You have to authorize it once. So it will log you in again. There's a lot of logging in going on. Are you sure you want to grant the following permissions? Make requests on behalf of someone else to get resources? Yes, I have to do this to get this to work. Choose the repository. It's called demo. Here it is. What is this sort order here? It's by random. Complete. Now, while linking the team project, he's essentially creating a new build definition, which I will see in Visual Studio in a second. He says the project is now linked. And you will find a new build definition called TechEd Room 4D CD. CD stands for continuous deployment. And we can use this one to upload. So now the build is doing two things, right? It's still building and testing, but it's also doing the deployment. And you can see that on the website of Visual Studio Online, what he's actually doing. It takes a little while until he gets a free machine. Let's watch this somewhere. Let's find here. Let's go into that project and watch what he's doing. That's actually the wrong one. Let's open up a new one. Here we go. But obviously, this is all only working if you're online. And if you're offline, as with everything in the cloud, it gets more tricky. But luckily, we're online today. So where is the new one? TechEd. Still running. It's a good moment if you have any questions regarding build. I have a link to the list of software that is pre-installed on those VMs that actually do the build for you when you choose the hosted build controller. You might notice that this is pulling the sources from a Git repository in TFS, so it's not a Team Foundation version control. You probably know that you can choose this in TFS 2013 and Visual Studio Online, and both are good for this. Takes a while today. Let's look at the deployed tab. And you can see that there's a deployment in progress. So it's actually not the build that we're waiting for. It seems to be the deployment. So he's actually running the deployment script to Azure, which seemed to take a while. You can redeploy it or assign a quality, like ready for testing or anything, once it's deployed. Right now, it's still deploying. OK, but that's the nice feature of build, that you can extend it, that it doesn't only build and test, but it goes through the deployment process on Azure. It will certainly finish at some point. And you don't have to watch it. It will finish at some point by itself, hopefully. OK, so hosted build controller, it's there automatically. So if you just want to set up a build real quickly, it's there. It's limited to 60 minutes for free per account per month. If you want more, you can insert your credit card into disk drive A or something. For the list of pre-installed software, there's a list that is updated regularly when Microsoft is updating the machines. And which is nice, even on the hosted build controller, you can run your own scripts and you can add your own build activities if you like. So everything you customized with TFS build already, which works on premises, you can also do that on the machines that Microsoft will spin up for you. They will reset the machine every time. So you're getting a clean machine. They're going back to a snapshot. And you can run custom scripts or build activities. Although custom scripts are kind of easier to write than build activities, and it's easier to reuse them, but you're free to choose what you like. Flexibility, you can add your own on-premises build agents like I showed you, can be offline, I mean on-premises or in the cloud themselves. Visual Studio Build Service, or the Elastic Build Service integrated in Visual Studio Online. You don't have to use it, but you're free to use it. So then let's look at some integration scenarios, which are quite interesting. And let's switch over to the demo machine for that. So if you have Team Foundation Server, you have a lot of nice features. But if you have Team Foundation Server on the internet, which is Visual Studio Online, or part of Visual Studio Online, you can actually integrate with other services on the web. Technically, this is nothing else than an eventing system. So Visual Studio Online can throw events, like somebody checked in, somebody requested a review, somebody added a bug with high priority, and it can inform another service on the internet, which will then do something. And on the other hand, there's an API based on REST standards that you probably heard already, and you can use that API to trigger something within Visual Studio Online. And you can use both directions if you want. And there are a couple of services that Microsoft already integrated, or that you can integrate if you like to. So what can we use? Let's try one. How about user voice? I read that user voice has an integration with Visual Studio Online now. OK, let's try that. Let's sign up. Great. I really need a solution for this. They're not working. It was working yesterday. Oh, I know what it is. Just use the right password. So what you can do on user voice is collect ideas, right? So I set up my new own site. And in the admin console, as a site administrator, I have an integrations option. So I can look for integrations that the user voice team is providing. They're using public APIs of other services, like Facebook, Google Analytics, and there's Visual Studio Online in a beta version. That's nice. And once I connect this, I already have done that, it will show all my team projects, all the work item types, and I can now select which ones I want to support. I like this one, and I might want another project as well. So four work item types selected. I can save. Now those are linked. And now if anyone has a new idea, I can go from there. I have a great vision. Please implement it. You know, that's a typical requirement, as you would get it from a customer. Just start coding. I will think about this later. Okay, anyway, that's the idea in the system. Post the new idea. So this is what your customer might have done. Other customers can vote on this one. Okay, let's give this three votes. And now the admin has his own dashboard in user voice, and we can look at all the feedback, all the ideas coming in. Okay, I have a great vision. Please implement it. So far, this is all plain user voice stuff. And now, once I'm here, I can update the status to inform my users. And I can also look for Visual Studio Online once there is an integration happening. And now I can link this feedback item or idea to a work item in TFS. I want to create a new one in the demo project, and it should be a product backlog item. Submit, and now it has been created. And I can click on it, and I will see that we have a new work item in TFS. And I can obviously do changes on the TFS side, like closing the work item. And after refreshing a couple of times, we will see that those changes went back to user voice. So it saw that something changed on the item that we just created. How did they work? Well, they used the REST API to create the new work item in the first place. And they used the REST API to subscribe to an event, a so-called service hook, so that they get informed once something is changed on that work item. So it's in both directions, and this is how they know when something changes. So this would be a form of integration that you are free to use if you like. And those APIs are usable on Visual Studio Online right now and not fully on TFS on premises. So there's more integrations if you're interested in seeing them. I have three examples in here. And it's more just showing you what's possible. It's not about those services like User Voice, Zapier, or Hubbit. It's more like that you see what's possible. For example, Zapier. That's an interesting service because that service actually has like a rich set of actions that you can do. So you can create emails, talk to other services. So it's kind of a broker service that you can put between two services so that you don't have to program all the actions yourself. So I started with a really simple example. I signed up for the free plan and I created a new trigger and action, which basically means, they call it a zap. And I told them, I want a new incoming email. And when this comes in, go to Visual Studio Online, and what do you want to do? Send a team room message, trigger a build, add a link to a work item, or create a new work item even? I like to create a new work item from out of an email. Cool. And let's do this. Then you put your URL in there. You have to authorize it once. So Visual Studio will pop up the dialog to authorize it. And then you can install a few filters. You can say everything that is sent to this email address and has like a certain priority or just from certain people will trigger this zap. And then what shall happen on the Visual Studio Online side? You select a project, you select a work item type, and then you can start mapping the fields of your work item like title, area, description, iteration path, whatever fields you like, and you can have little, replacement variables that will be executed. As you can see, I prefixed the subject from the email with email so that I can directly see at the work item that an email created it. And now if I send an email to this address, it will do all the magic and create a new work item. It will set the title, it will set the description. That's all that I configured in the project that I selected. So this took me maybe 5 minutes to set up, and I had a new, really rich scenario for a few of our guys at the company, which like to send emails to TFS to create a new work item, which also allows them to send new work items to TFS while they're offline. And then when they're online, they're sending out the emails, and then they're getting those work items created. Okay, so this is another example how rich this can be. And then it's obviously up to you to build a few cool new integrations if you want. Okay. So this is based on events, so-called service hooks. Those are the events currently available in VSO. So if you want to get notified or start something, those are the events you can catch and then do something, like code is checked in or pushed if it's Git, work items created, updated, commented, or a build is completed. This is how they look like, in fact. It's a JSON stream with all the information. This is the information you will get for the build completed event, for example. And then there's a REST API that you can use to get a list of builds in the case of build or to add a new subscription for the event that you get notified. This is what User Voice has done, right? They use the REST API not only to create a work item, but also to set up a trigger so they will be informed when the event is raised. So So that's pretty cool. And technically, it's only the REST APIs that you can also use from your own apps, web apps, Windows apps, or phone apps. It's obviously authorization because you want a safe and secure way other than basic authorization. And it's those service hooks, those events that you can get a trigger back when something happened in TFS. So many integration scenarios right now only in Visual Studio Online, most of them at least. Okay, so far so good. Any questions with the last demo or so far? Happy? No questions or just tired or no coffee exception? Who knows? So, a couple of things that I wanted to show you just to make sure you do it right the first time. A couple of things you would do when you start your first Visual Studio Online account is the first thing, the very first thing, you go to the options, you configure the administrator settings at the very top, and you will see that a couple of things are different here. You have the region, which tells you where you created that Visual Studio Online project. As you know, as of, I think it's actually yesterday, technically you can create new accounts here in the European region. You can select one account owner, so there's only one owner for account. Although you can change that, you can't have two owners or a group, which is kind of an issue. So what you have to do is once you create that for your company, maybe you have to add all the other admins somewhere, and you would usually do that as collection admins. That's the highest thing you can easily do, and you would go down to the collection level like you would do for TFS on-premises, security, team, what is it, project collection, administrators, members, add a member, add user, and now you can add the users that you want to be administrator in the same account. So still there's only one account owner, but at least you have multiple people who are allowed to do most of the stuff on the Visual Studio Online account. One thing you should be aware of. Next thing, you see that here at the bottom, it says something with Microsoft Azure Active Directory and that this account is not backed by an Active Directory in Microsoft Azure. So normally, Visual Studio Online requires you to use Microsoft accounts, you know, the former Live IDs, which is nice if you only have people that don't work in the same company or if you're just a very small shop, you can just add people, it's super quickly, and even from different companies we can work together. But it requires you to have those Live IDs or Microsoft accounts. And what if you already have Active Directory? Then you can set up an Azure Active Directory, link that Azure Active Directory to a real Active Directory, and then link your Visual Studio Online account to your Azure Active Directory. And then all those three parts are playing nicely together, and you can use your normal login that you use at work to connect to Visual Studio Online. So once you turn this on and you link your account to Active Directory, then obviously you have to have all those users that are using your account in that Active Directory, otherwise they can't log in anymore, right? So you better make sure that you added all the people you really want. Here's how that looks like on the classic portal. I added a Visual Studio Online account, which is not yet added to a, or not yet linked to an Active Directory. Here it is. It's called Nino Demo. And I can go to settings, and there's a current directory, and you can see it's now bound to this Azure Active Directory. And Azure Active Directory is really nothing else than a list of users with their logins and names, and it can be synchronized with your local Active Directory. And if you don't have a local Active Directory, you can just use it on the web. So it's just a way for applications to authorize users, and you can use your own domains if you want and not the Microsoft accounts. a few facts that you might find interesting before we go into the demos. So most parts of Visual Studio Online and TFS are the same, right? It's really the same code working here, although some obvious parts are completely different, like the login part because you're using Microsoft accounts and those active directories in Azure and stuff. But you know, most parts, work items, and build and stuff are the same. So whatever Microsoft has to fix in TFS to make it work better as Visual Studio Online, you will get this as a TFS update. And you can still be sure that it's kind of the same behavior, which is good. Visual Studio Online is officially generally available, which basically means there is an SLA behind it. You can get money back if it doesn't work. There's a guarantee that it should be up and running. This includes the build servers and the load testing service. And yesterday it was announced that over 2 million people registered for VSL. You know, registered. Doesn't mean that they ever started it or used it or created their first project, but at least registered. So there is a kind of an interest behind that. And I know of a few teams who actually do production work on Visual Studio Online, and it works. I mean, it's still an internet service, so it might have bad days, like we have bad days when we get up in the morning, and you might see an error when logging in, or the worst thing is if you see that 500 error or something, you know, internal error occurred, and you're trying to deliver something to your own client. This is not a pleasant feeling, but honestly, that's an interesting scenario. So I switched over my own code a couple of months ago to Visual Studio Online, and then it had a breakdown, an outage for whatever reason. I didn't know how long, right? I mean, it just disappeared. I was just working and trying to get a release ready, and the first feeling is not good. It's like, okay, there's nothing I can do. I need to get this stuff out today, and it's not a good feeling. But on the other hand, I started thinking, and wait, I'm not the guy trying to repair this server now. Someone else is. Some guys at Microsoft are now running around and trying to fix the problem, and I would go make some tea, some cookies, enjoy maybe a TV show for the next 30 minutes, and 40 minutes later it was up and running again. Actually, I like that new world. The more I think about it, it actually has advantages. It's, you know, we're used to fix everything ourselves, but sometimes it's actually very nice that someone else fixes it. The Team Foundation Server team themselves moved to Visual Studio Online. So they left their on-premises very, very huge instance that they were using. The rest of Visual Studio is still using that. But only the TFS team, maybe 100, something over 100 people, moved over with everything. Source code, work items, builds. And it's now the largest and most active account in Visual Studio Online. And that's really nice. That's a real nice form of dog fooding. If Visual Studio Online is slow, if it doesn't work, they're the first ones to have a problem. They will fix it. That gives me a better feeling, to be honest. Visual Studio Online gets updated every 3 weeks, which can be good and bad at the same time. And so far, the last data I could get was from April. It was running on 212 machines, in fact, split in application tiers, job agents, and most of them are build and load test agents. Updates every 3 weeks, you know, this has advantages and disadvantages. The good news about updates every 3 weeks is you have the latest set of features, so they're adding also small features that really help you. You don't have to wait 2 years until that new column that you always wanted is coming. It's coming faster, that's good. But on the other hand, every 3 weeks on a Monday, it's like, hey, where's my button gone? I'm sure it was here, and where's it gone now? So you have a lot of change going on, right? It's I'm not sure where the sweet spot is, but every 3 weeks, new features is a lot. So one question that often comes up, when is this backup? Is Microsoft backing up servers in the cloud? What are they actually doing with it? And yes, they are. So first of all, they're saving your server on three physically distinct server locations. It's still the same geographically locations, but it's saved on three servers. Then they have backups running. And as you can see here, it's one every day, and there's an incremental backup every hour. And of course, if it's just source code, you can just sync it to your own machine or have your build server grab the whole source code once a day. So you can be sure even if Visual Studio Online is not working, you have the latest source because you have your local build server waiting there. Yeah, using organizational accounts, that was the example I will show you with the Azure Active Directory. And if you want, you can connect your on-premises classic Active Directory with the one in Azure. Also, as I've shown you, there are three URLs you do not want to forget because you will need them if you use Visual Studio Online. It's a URL where you can see how the service is doing, the service status. There's one URL with a detailed service status if you really want to know why it's not working. And there's one called the feature timeline if you get confused when which features were added or if they're already available on TFS on-premises or not. So this is the one that you always hope will be green because sometimes it's yellow or red. Right now, everything is looking good. That's the best thing that can happen. That's the one you want. So if anything's not working as you expect, you want to have a look at that site. And there's a link to the service block, which is actually this one here, with all the little details if something is degraded or if there are any planned outages or stuff like that. And then there's this feature timeline, which basically means you see all the features that Microsoft has added, and in the column on the right, the server column, you will see if this is already available in TFS on-premises or if it's not. Some things will never be available in TFS on-premises because they don't make any sense, but most of them where you see read feature or future update, it's future update, right? Those features will probably be part of the next TFS updates. And there are kind of nice things that they added, actually. For example, full text of text fields and stuff, of large text fields. So I told you that most parts are the same, but a few parts are not, right? For example, the users hub, so that you have to assign a license to every user. This is something you would not be doing on TFS on-premises. Also, you have a feature called automatic profile pictures. So even if someone was too lazy to have a profile picture, he would get an automatic profile picture, which basically is just his initials on a colored tile. Some resources are limited. If you use the build server or the load test server on the cloud, then you have a limit, and then you can either continue with the billing, Azure billing, or not. And a lot of admin stuff like creating team projects, deleting team projects, happens on the website now and not in Visual Studio as it would with TFS on-premises. If you use any email notifications, you usually have to confirm them. For example, after changing your email, you have to confirm them once so that you can't spam anyone with that service. And the emails that Microsoft will send you if you configure email notifications, like for changed work items or for completed builds, they will come from Visual Studio Online at Microsoft.com. You might want to add that into your spam filters. But again, most things are really the same. Just a few ones are different between the core services of TFS and VSL. So what else? What are reasons to not use Visual Studio Online is something that I try to create a list. And this is what I came up with. There is no way to export the data. So you can't just grab the collection Visual Studio Online and download it. Of course, you can grab the whole source code, but it's not the same thing. There's no real import. So you have your collection of TFS on-premises, everything nicely configured, maybe even customized. You want to go into the cloud? There's no easy way to import your collection, which obviously has reasons. Microsoft wants to keep the server in a good shape and keep updates of customizations in a good shape. And if you have customized the server, they have no clue how to handle that, right? I mean, that will be interesting. You can't customize the process templates. So you can't add custom fields. You cannot add states. You cannot change the workflow. You cannot change the look and feel of work items. That's a pity. I'm sure Microsoft is working on that one. If you want them to work faster, go to the user voice site and help them reprioritize correctly. This was one that is already solved, as you know by now. The integration with Active Directory, now you can do that using the Azure Active Directory. So this was a limitation in February this year. And this one was changed today as well, the choice of geographic location. As you now know, there's a European data center where you can, if you start a new Visual Studio Online account, you can host it in Europe. For the data import, there's also a tool from the company called OpsHub. They have one free tool. It's not really taking your whole collection into the cloud, but it's trying to get the data out of your collection into some other format and moving it over to Visual Studio Online. So it's probably the best thing if you say that we have to move our history from source code and work items, then this is probably the best thing you can do if you want to go to Visual Studio Online. The stuff in the middle is the same for both Visual Studio Online and TFS. The parts on the left are integrations with other on-premises servers. This is only in TFS. And the parts on the right, Visual Studio Build Service, Load Test Service, Application Insights, those are the additional services that you will only get in the cloud. A more detailed comparison where you can see a few features and where they are available. So especially the customization part on the is missing on Visual Studio Online, I would say. And also the reporting. Although you can read here that reporting is only available in TFS, that's only partly true. Reporting means reporting using SQL Server reporting services, so that very customizable way of reporting. You can only have that on premises. But if you want to use just work item charts that also show trend charts meanwhile, you can do that on Visual Studio Online as well. Has anyone created custom reports in TFS? I know you have, but custom reports? Okay, two of you, so not so many should think that this is a super important feature. So why would you be using VSO? Of course, you might be using it for your actual production work. But you might also just use it to play around with new features before they will be available in TFS on premises. You might want to combine the best of both worlds by using Visual Studio Online for everything that's not critical and having like build servers and test servers on site because there might be some critical stuff in there. And also, if you have smaller projects, personal projects, projects which span multiple companies, it might be way simpler to just set up a Visual Studio Online project. So in average, creating a new Visual Studio Online account, creating the first team project, adding, let's say, the 5 free users to it, costs you 2 minutes. So it's really, really fast. So while others are still installing TFS, or probably even the prerequisites of TFS, you're already up and running. So it really makes your daily work easier, but of course your source code is not locally, but somewhere else stored in the cloud. So how did the TFS admin's life look like before Visual Studio Online? Everyone who's installed TFS knows that already. You have to do a lot of things, right? Prepare the environment and stuff like that, and maintenance tasks and stuff. And the life of a VSO admin is just create a Visual Studio Online account, create a team project, add the users, assign the licenses, you're done. 2 minutes if everything goes well. If you're trying to set up the Active Directory sync, give it 2 more minutes. Okay, so in the next 75 minutes, I want to tell you what Visual Studio Online is, what the advantages are, why you might be using it, and how this looks like. Welcome to my session. It's great to have you here in Barcelona. I hope you have had a good day so far. And now, please enjoy the conference. If you have any questions, either now or tonight at the welcome reception, there's a booth for Visual Studio and stuff. I'll be there and a lot of other people from Microsoft. Let us know if you have any questions regarding TFS, VSO, Scrum, or whatever. Thank you for your attention. Have a good day.